If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Mino Studio is a pre- and post-production facility for all of your audio needs. Mino Studio's founder is an accredited audio engineer with top 40 and indie album credits. With over 30 years of music industry experience, Mino Studio can take your podcast from idea to reality. Contact Mino Studio at MinoStudio777@gmail.com for more information. That's Mino Studio spelled M-E-N-O, MinoStudio777@gmail.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, and I'm your host, Bill Manicero. This is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dogs, that's D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we have a fun show today. As you know, the focus of this show is on how real estate investing can generate significant cash flow for your retirement today and in the future, and how you can create a legacy for your children and grandchildren. And although we focus a lot on multifamily and apartment investing, there are a number of different ways to invest in real estate. Fix and flipping, buy and hold, commercial real estate, deeds, liens, and self-storage, to name a few. Well, our next guest is going to introduce you to a new, very profitable and oft-times overlooked real estate investing methodology. Kevin Bubb is a Florida-based real estate investor, top iTunes podcast host, and serial entrepreneur with over 40 million of real estate transactions. His extensive investment experience spans the gamut of apartment buildings, single-family homes, office buildings, raw land, condos, and his favorite and by far one where he's really focused the most on right now, mobile home parks. With over 16 years of experience, Kevin now educates investors to locate, acquire, and create higher than average returns from this widely misunderstood niche of mobile home park investing. He shares his expertise through the Mobile Home Academy and also as the host of the Investing for Cash Flow podcast, which has become one of the hottest podcasts on iTunes, often in the top 100. In addition to his real estate endeavors, Kevin is passionate about giving back and is the founder of several charitable organizations, including runningforbrews.com, a social running club with more than 10,000 active members, and 72 Hours to Key West, an annual 280-mile bike ride benefiting impoverished families during the holidays. Wow. Yeah, you're a busy guy, Kevin, and we welcome you to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bill. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to spending some time with you and the Old Dogs Network.
All right. Well, maybe you could just, I just kind of gave a rough overview of your background, but you know, maybe you could tell us just how did you get into real estate investing and eventually into mobile home parks?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was actually a pretty good overview of my life story, but I'll go into a little more detail. I guess everyone's got a unique story, right? Everyone's story is unique to themselves, but I got involved in real estate just by luck, right? I started when I was 19 years old, but I was really I was a 19-year-old with no direction in life whatsoever. I was a really terrible high school student, barely graduated high school. I got in a lot of trouble when I was younger. I grew up in a blue-collar, you know, middle-class type family, great parents. I mean, gave us what we needed. We didn't have a lot. We didn't have a little. We had, you know, right in the middle. And but I just, for some reason or another, I hung out with the wrong people. You know, your parents always tell you, you know, you need to stop hanging around those guys. They're going to get you in a bunch of trouble. And well, I didn't think they were right, but they were right. And I got in a lot of trouble and did poor in school and did graduate barely. Went to community college with no direction whatsoever. Just thought that I had to go to community college. I didn't want to go away to school. I don't think I would have probably been accepted anyway, but I also didn't want to waste my parents' money because I wasn't really all that enthusiastic about being a student. And, but I also didn't know what I wanted to do in life. But so I went to community college, got a bartending job, and just kind of did that for a year and a half. And, again, just didn't really have any direction whatsoever, and got really lucky by meeting an individual. He just happened to be a boyfriend of the mother of a girl I was dating. Okay, and I met him by happenstance, and he was a local real estate investor. I'm just going to kind of condense the story a little bit, but he was a local real estate investor who I guess saw some kind of promise in me, or you know, saw some kind of misdirection that he wanted to fix, and we befriended one another, and he kind of took me under his wings for a year and a half and taught me the business primarily of single family homes as well as small apartment buildings, which he owned both of in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And that was really my start into the business. You know, that gave me some kind of hope in life, and that gave me something to really work towards. I really grabbed onto it. I saw the success he had, and I saw his lifestyle. And I met a lot of others in that business in a very short period of time. It was something that made sense to me. And I wanted to have the lifestyle that he had and all these others had that I had met. And I just grabbed a hold of it. And I continued going to school. I continued bartending. But I also, within a year and a half after following him around, started flipping homes and buying, dilapidated row homes in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, renovating them and keeping those rentals. Had a few small multifamily properties as well. And kind of did that for a few years before really wanted to make a change in my life, and I moved to sunny Florida. I moved to Tampa, Florida in 2002, and that's where things really picked up steam. You know, I started buying a lot of single family homes. That was really my focus. That's all I really knew. I knew some small multifamily stuff, but you know, it's kind of on the same scale, and created quite a large portfolio of single family homes and small apartment buildings in Southwest Florida, and did quite well. Built a pretty big mortgage company at the same time. And then, as we all know, 2008 happened. You know, 2007, 2008 happened, and pretty much most of what I worked for that entire time frame, I lost. 99% of it I lost during the crash, and had to rebuild myself. And so fast forward a few years after that, was getting back into real estate, 2010, 2011 era, and knew that I wanted it to be multifamily, and was introduced, just again by luck, to mobile home parks. I knew of them. I didn't know too much about them, but was shown the business model, was given kind of the details of it, and you know, why they're in some cases superior to apartment buildings and some of the unique barriers to entry that exist in that particular industry. And it excited me. And so from that point till today, that has been our sole focus with myself and my company is owning and operating manufactured housing communities or mobile home parks, same thing, throughout numerous states here on the East Coast of the U.S.
Wow.
So, yeah. That's a very condensed story there. There's obviously a lot more in the middle, but we could talk for 3 hours on my real story, but that's really how I fell into it, and that's how I got my start.
Neat. Now, have you owned apartment buildings before?
I have, yes.
And so you have the experience of having owned apartment buildings and obviously having owned mobile home parks. And How do you compare the two? Why the shift from from apartment buildings to mobile home parks?
You know, one of the things when I was getting back into the business, I knew that I wanted to be multifamily, and so I started looking in some of the markets that I had an interest in investing in. And you know, multifamily was already getting hot in 2011. I mean, it's on fire now. It's very difficult to find what I would consider home runs. And we're very slow and methodical with our approach of what we buy. We don't just buy to buy. Like, it's got to be something that we can knock out of the park. And because we're long-term investors, we like to buy in great markets, but we also like to get phenomenal deals. And so I was having a hard time finding, apartment complexes that would really meet the returns I was hoping for, in the size range that I was looking for as well. And so, just about that same time where I was kind of ramping up, I was introduced to the park business and I started researching parks and found that it seemed at that point the opportunities were a little bit more abundant to allow me to yield the types of returns I was looking for. And once I started learning more about, the uniqueness of mobile home parks, I started becoming more attracted to them. So, so to answer your question, the one big thing that I saw as like an attraction factor was the types of returns I could get at that point in time. I could definitely get all day, every day, leveraged, high double digit returns, very high double digit returns in mobile home parks. And that was very hard to achieve with anything I was seeing in the multifamily space. And then as I dug a little deeper, the other things that really became very apparent to me as to why I need to be focused on mobile home parks versus apartment buildings is, there's a very unique barrier to entry in the mobile home park business in that they're not being built anymore. I mean, there's about 50,000 of them in the U.S. and that's an exact number, but that's kind of like a rough figure because there's some parks out there that people don't even know exist. Like, they're not really zoned mobile home park. And so they're there, but you would never be able to find them on a directory or anything like that. But there's about 50,000 that exist. Most cities, counties, townships, local governments, they do not issue permits anymore for parks to be built. They don't like them. Obviously there's a negative stigma attached to the industry. And so they're not being built anymore. In fact, about 1% of the parks in the U.S. are being shut down or, torn down for different purposes each and every year. So there's actually a diminishing supply of these things. And, what that means to us as investors is that we can go into a really good market. We can go into a really strong market, one that has a high demand for affordable housing, and we can buy a good quality park or community, and we don't have to worry about a developer coming in and building another one right down the road. So, I mean, we got like these walls built up around us essentially. So as long as we buy in a good market and buy a good quality product, we're very much insulated from competition, direct competition, that is. So, and lots of other reasons as well, but those are two of the really big reasons that really attracted us to parks.
Now, with that limited supply, is it driving rents up? I mean, or is it driving fees up?
It is. There's a bunch of uniqueness about this industry, but another big thing is that a large percentage of these parks, they were developed between probably the 50s and the 70s. And now you'll find some that were developed in the 80s and 90s, and even some as late as like 2000 or mid 2000s. But most of them were developed between the 50s and the 70s. And a lot of the parks we own today were built in the 60s or 70s era. And what you find a lot is when we bought, it wasn't owned by necessarily the original owner. We have bought some from the original owner, but it might be like the second owner, but that owner has owned it for 30 plus years. I mean, they've owned it for quite a long time. They're kind of aging out of it. They're in their 70s and their 80s. They've owned it for a long time, but they don't run it like a business owner would run it. They run it like a mom and pop would run it. And so very often we find parks to where rents haven't been raised in 5 years, 10 years. They're 50% below market. And so there offers a lot of opportunity for us to go in and run it like a business and also immediately increase the revenues in the NOI of the park just by doing simple things as raising rents. For instance, I'll give you an example. We have a park under contract right now in Kentucky. It's been owned for 23 years by the existing family that owns it. They are the second or third owner, but they've owned it for 23 years. They actually live in the park. There's a single family home at the front of the park. They live there. They raise their family there. And so this park has become almost part of their family, right? I mean, the people that live in this community know their kids. They know the other family's kids. And there's this whole thing there to where there's some guilt involved with these owners raising rents on their residents because they're their friends. Right. And so they have not raised rents in this park in 6 years. And the last time they raised rents, it was $5. And so this park, it's the nicest park in town. It's been well maintained. It's got a lot of long-term residents. It's a good looking park, and the rents are about I think they're about 35% below market. And so in that park, we're buying it on existing income. We're not, it's not a home run today how we're buying it, but it is a very high quality park. And so we're buying it on what is essentially like a 10 cap. And we're levering into it. We've got some really good local financing from a bank. And our levered returns going into it, I think, are about 16%. But immediately upon us buying it, we're going to go in and raise the rents to, I mean, basically they're 155 today. We're going to raise them to 195 right away. Without doing anything else, we're going to raise them to 195. And the market really is about 225 on that park. And so over the next couple of years, we'll get it to the 225. But just doing that alone, we're going to add about $400,000 worth of value to that park and increase our revenue significantly on our bottom line. So it, opportunities like that exist, I would say all over the place, but they're very often found in the mobile home park space, you know, opportunities to where the rents haven't been raised in a long time. So,
well, you mentioned bank financing. How are the banks with the mobile home parks? I mean, it'd be the same as they treat you the same they would with an apartment building, or is there a stigma that you have to deal with?
There's a stigma, and it depends. You know, it's hit or miss. We've had deals completely fall apart because it might have been in a smaller market to where there was only three or four local community banks. And if we couldn't get any, you know, any of those comfortable with the deal, then the deal fell apart because there was no financing available. And so this Kentucky park's in a small market. There's about four or five banks that became an option for us to finance it because it's only a $750,000 purchase. So it's not a huge deal. And so we're kind of we're either we go with a local bank or we don't have any other lending options. There's not many national lenders that will lend under $1 million on that type of asset. So we just happened that we got two banks that are competing for it now. So that they understand it. The one bank actually had done a loan on it 23 years ago when the original owners purchased it. So they were already comfortable with the asset. And the other bank was comfortable with the asset as well, just knowing the marketplace. And so this time around, we've got two banks competing for the park, but we've had other situations to where we can't get any banks on board because, you know, they're just not comfortable with parks or they don't understand them, which is, that's more commonly the problem. They just don't understand the actual business model of a mobile home park. They don't get it. And so they can't wrap their minds around it. Thus, they can't get comfortable with it. But in this scenario, actually, we have two banks competing, so it's working in our favor.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, other options, once you get above $1 million loan amount, and as long as it's a good park, as long as it's in a good market, and it's not, I mean, the park has to be a decent quality, right? I mean, if it's got drugs, sex, rock and roll going on, and it's dilapidated homes and the roads have potholes, you're going to have a tough time getting financing on it, no matter where you're buying it or what bank you're dealing with. And so a lot of it depends on the park itself, you know, but also the market has a big bearing on that as well.
Oh, sure. Well, you mentioned that you have some pretty strict criteria going into these deals. Could you just kind of give us just a rough rundown of what you look for in the deals that you purchase?
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as like our acquisition criteria, I mean, number one, from the park itself, like we're not really looking at things nowadays that are, you know, smaller than about 40 or 50 spaces in size, unless it would be in a market where we already own something else. Okay. So that'd be like a size criteria. You know, markets specific, you know, we look for markets that, you know, have stable economic growth. You know, they've got a, you know, below an 8% unemployment rate. They've got below 15% vacant housing. We want to know that there's a demand for affordable housing. So we look at like median home values, and we want to know that it's at least $100,000 or higher. Sometimes we'll make an exception for the market, but normally we look at about $100,000 or higher for median house values. That just means that we're not competing against stick-built homes because we're affordable housing. But if we go into a market that, you know, median house price is $50,000, well, guess what? Now that person that will live in our park could also probably afford the home for the same price. And so if you have the option of living in a mobile home or a stick-built home, you're probably going to choose the stick-built home. And so we look at things like that. And, you know, from a return standpoint, we want to know, and this isn't always the case because there's some parks that we do a lot of turnaround deals to where day one, they might not look all that great financially, but in a very short period of time thereafter, we know we can operationally turn them around. So, but just generally speaking, we want to know that we can get into a park on today's numbers, like how it's operating today. We want to know there's upside there, but just how it's operating today without any of that upside added in, that we can at least get like a 16 to 17% cash on cash return. And we want to know that there's upside for us to get above 20% within the first 12 months. And that's a levered return. And so that's like our initial criteria of what kind of returns we're looking for out of these parks. And so we don't really shop by cap rate per se. We really shop by what financing is available for that particular park and what the long-term strategy really looks like and what our overall returns are going to look like. And, you know, we look at like internal rate of returns as well, but really the big number that we hang our hat on is I want to know what the cash on cash returns are going to look like. Cause that's real numbers today. That doesn't factor in selling the property or refinancing it or anything like that. That factors in today, what we're putting in our pocket as far as the return on the money that we have injected into this deal. So
now, do you look at it in the similar way that that we do, like with multifamily, where you know we're looking at like a net per door that we're going to get out of you know a particular property? I mean, would you have a similar criteria for yourself?
No, you know, I've never factored it that way. I mean, I mm-hmm. guess that's a possibility, but no, I don't look at a net number per door. No, I just don't.
and it seems like there'd be a lot of mixed variables too, because you have manufactured homes in place, and then you have ones that are owned by residents. Do you usually have a mixed situation? What are you really looking for ideally with a park?
Yeah, so the ideal scenario, like in a perfect world, every park that we own would be where we just own the land and the residents own their own home and they just pay lot rent. Like that's like the ideal scenario, but that's just not the industry. I mean, there are a lot of parks out there like that, but over the years, the industry has kind of changed a little bit in that, you know, number one, you have people that pass away. And so if they pass away, their heirs might not want their trailer, or, you know, just they might have passed away, you know, unexpectedly. And now all of a sudden they've got this park has this abandoned home sitting there. No one's living in it. They don't have any heirs, or the heirs don't want it. And so parks just end up accumulating homes. They just do. Depending on what they do with it, that would determine whether or not they have a rental, that they just end up with a rental unit, or they decide to sell it back to another end user. Now, some parks, they're very strict about this. Like they will not have any rentals whatsoever. And so if a home becomes abandoned, they'll take it back and they'll only sell it. And so they're looking just for a cash buyer. They'll never rent it because they only want a lot rental park. And so that, you know, buying a lot rental only park is like our ideal scenario. The park in Kentucky I was just telling you about, that actually is a lot rental only park. There is no park owned homes. The only thing that there is in that park is it actually has a 5-unit apartment complex, and as well as a single family residence that's all in the same property. So we actually will have some rental component, but not much. You know, most of the actual repairs and maintenance will be, you know, it'd be the tenant's responsibility. We have one park that we actually own every single unit in that park. That's not the ideal scenario, but every park's different. We look at it on a case-by-case basis. In that park, we absolutely stole it. We got a phenomenal deal. It's in an incredible market, and it makes a lot of money. It's just, it's a lot of work. It makes a lot of money, but it's a lot of work because we got a lot of repairs and maintenance. We got a lot of turnover because it's essentially an apartment complex is what it is, because they're all rental units. And so all the other parks we own are kind of in the in-between. They're a hybrid mix. Like we have, let's say, on average, probably 80% lot renters, and then the other 20% are park-owned units that either they're rentals or, you know, our main goal is to sell them back, you know, is to basically either do a rent-to-own scenario or just try to find someone that has a little bit of cash, you know, like that's qualified. Maybe they don't have, you know, maybe the home's worth 10 grand. If they come in with six, and we know they've got good steady employment, you know, they're good people, they got a good background, and we know they're going to be good long-term lot renters, we'll make them a deal of a lifetime and we'll sell that to them for $6,000. I'm serious. I mean, we don't try to make money on the homes. We just try to get what we have into them out of them, but we never try to profit on the homes. Our goal is to always try to work back to converting that park into a lot rental only park, because that is the most desirable type of park to own, because you got minimal headaches at that point. You know, if you're not replacing ACs or you know, fixing roof leaks or plumbing issues or anything like that, it's very minimal. I mean, you can run a 100-unit park if it was all lot renters with just one manager that probably works 30 hours a week. I mean, that would be really all you need, other than Roto-Rooter every once in a while to unclog the sewer line. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the appeal. I mean, I think for folks that could get, I mean, you've got slabs of cement and some mechanicals mm-hmm. there and, yep. You know, maybe a clubhouse or something or whatever, but, and obviously a manager, but it seems like you eliminate a lot of the management headaches that you do with properties where you do have to, you know, go into their units and fix this and pull you know, boots out of the toilet or whatever, you know.
So. Yeah, right. So yeah, and there's very minimal turn as well. When they actually own their own home, they've got some financial commitment there. And very rarely do we see scenarios to where there's major delinquencies in a park that has majority lot renters. You know, you'll find that they've lived there for a long time. They pay on time because they're at risk of losing their home. They're not only at risk of, you know, getting kicked out of the community, but they're at risk of losing that home as well. Because, I mean, in the average single wide home, it costs about $3,000 to $4,000 to move and reset up in another location. The average mobile home park resident never ever has $3,000 or $4,000 sitting in their bank account. And if they did, they'd probably find something better to spend it on than moving their mobile home. And so they've got some financial commitment there and obligation that normally you become a priority. You're being the landlord, you become the priority, getting paid first before they go buy the big screen TV or whatever else. They might buy Nintendo games or whatever. But it's a little different scenario when you've got rental units. You know, it's just a different type of clientele. And so we always try to work back towards getting the park to a lot rental type arrangement. And it takes work, it takes a lot of time, but it's very doable.
It seems like eviction would be a little bit complicated, especially if somebody owns their home.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen that often. It is more complicated, but it just doesn't happen often. I mean, I can't tell you the last time that we actually had an eviction on one of our tenant-owned units. I honestly think it's been years since we've actually had to evict somebody that hasn't paid on their unit. You know, normally what happens if they actually get behind, and we don't let them get far behind, we're pretty strict about our collection procedures. And so what we'll do is if they're not going to pay and we've started the eviction, we'll go to them and say, hey, look, like if you don't have the money to move your home, if you're truly going to let this thing ride through, let us give you a couple hundred bucks to move and we'll buy your trailer from you. You know, give us a title. We'll give you whatever, you know, $1,000. Hand this thing over. Otherwise, it's going to sit here and you're not going to have any money to move and you're going to kick down. You're going to have this eviction on your background. So here's some money now. Here's a little bit more money for the trailer. Give us a title and move on. And typically that works.
Right.
You know, normally we don't have an issue with that. And we'll just buy the trailer. That way we don't have to go through the abandoned title process, because if we do evict them and they leave the trailer there, depending on the state, there's a whole different process we have to go through to actually get a title reissued. And it's like if someone left a car on your property, at a certain point in time, that car becomes your property, but you got to go through this abandoned title process. And it can be pretty lengthy in some states. So a lot of times we'll just try to buy the home back from them.
Right, right. Now, in this process that you've been involved in buying mobile home parks, everybody has that ramp up learning curve, you know, in the process. And maybe you could zero in on, for example, one of the biggest mistakes that you made and how you learned from it.
Well, you know, luckily, I obviously, since I had been an investor for so long and I'd owned multifamily, and I've owned other type of commercial real estate and lots of single family homes. So I was very comfortable with the idea of having a lot of rentals. I was comfortable with owning property that wasn't local to me. I was comfortable with the underwriting and evaluation process of both markets as well as the asset itself. And so I was comfortable with all that. But even then, mobile home parks are very unique. Just like any different asset's unique, right? It's its own business model. You look at self-storage, you look at shopping centers, you look at, I don't know, assisted living facilities. They're their own unique business model. And even though you have experience as a real estate investor, let's say you own commercial real estate, but you're going to go buy an assisted living facility, you need to become an expert in that particular business model. And so I knew going into it that there was going to be a lot of stuff I still didn't know, even though I went through a boot camp, and I basically sought out the advice of others that were in the industry and just got as much information as I possibly could. But what I did proactively is I went out and I found a guy that was, he had about 30 years experience in the industry. So he had a track record. He owned some communities. He had been in the financing side for 20 plus years of his career and then started becoming an owner operator. And so he had a lot of experience. And so I basically brought him on board, made a deal with him and said, hey, I just need you there to make sure I don't make any stupid mistakes. And in exchange for that, I will give you equity on the first couple of deals that we buy. You know, you don't have to have active involvement. You just have to make sure I don't make any dumb moves. And
right.
So that's what we did. That's exactly what we did. I brought someone on that had experience. He's no longer, an active partner in our company. Now, he is, but he isn't. So he has some involvement in some of the deals we own. But a lot of the deals we do today, we don't have him there, only because we don't need him. And, but that's what I did initially to avoid a lot of the bigger mistakes. And, but even then, I kicked myself in the butt because, you know, there's still a lot that I didn't know. And there's sometimes that I probably should have run some ideas or some potential opportunities past him that I didn't, because I thought, hey, I'm becoming an expert at this. Like, I get it now. I don't need to call Randy up whenever I have these questions. And I missed out on an opportunity. I didn't know it was an opportunity at the time. It was a deal that I got as far as getting it under contract, negotiated some amazing owner financing terms. And I couldn't get comfortable with both a little bit of the market and a little bit of the deal itself. It had a lot of hair on it. But now, knowing what I know today, I know that I literally missed out on about $1 million of pretty easy equity by buying that deal. In fact, I've seen it come back on the market after it's been fully turned around and stabilized. And it's about $1.1 million more than what I could have bought it for. So I did make a mistake. I didn't lose money on that deal, but I definitely left a lot of money on the table. And it's I think it happens to everyone. And, you know, now I know better. You know, experience will take you very far. So the more deals I looked at, the more markets I looked at, the more we started buying, I got comfortable with, I would have been comfortable with that deal. And so, but back then I wasn't, and I passed up on it. So.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, a lot of our listeners are either approaching retirement or they're already in retirement. And some of them may even be residents of mobile home parks. And in some cases, you know, you have folks that are fixed incomes or maybe they have limited reserves. But, you know, they're listening to you and they're going, gee, mobile home parks would be fantastic. And but, you know, the cost of entry is always a factor for people. And what would you recommend to people like that that have an interest, they would really like to pursue this, but maybe have a limited amount that they could get involved with?
Well, you know, I think there's, you know, with any commercial deal, I mean, I tell everyone to go into it just expecting the worst. I expect that you're going to have to come up with 25% down. And so you're going to have some money, right? And so if you came to me and you had zero money in your pocket and you said, I want to buy a mobile home park, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I'd say it's going to be very challenging. But with that being said, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there finding distress situations. And like I had mentioned earlier on, there's a lot of parks that are owned by mom and pops that are aging out of these things, or they just haven't really treated it so much like a business. And they're leaving us a lot on the table. And there's opportunity there sometimes, and not all the time. I'm not saying that you can just go out and start doing direct mail and making cold calls. You can find a million deals that, you know, seller's going to finance it for you. He's going to do it for a little down. I mean, those exist, but they're few and far between, but they're out there. And so I'll give you an example of a deal that we're doing right now. An actual listener that I met through our podcast, he brought it to us probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and we're partnering with them on this deal, but it's in Pennsylvania. It's a 40 space park. And this is a good example for those that might not have a ton of money. This will just show you that there's opportunity out there. It's a 41 space deal. I think 31 or 32 of the spaces are occupied with homes. All those homes are owned by the residents. And I think the lot rent in that park is about $300 a month. And that park basically is a husband and wife that owned it. The husband passed away 10 years ago, and the wife took it over, but didn't really take it over. She lives about 6 hours away. She doesn't even have a manager there on site. The residents send their rent through the mail, which only half of them do. The other half just don't pay. And, you know, it's just been neglected. The road's got potholes, but it's in a great market. It's right down the road from, you know, $500,000 neighborhood of homes. And, you know, it's a good market. It's got good bones to it. And so with that being said, she's just kind of over it. She basically almost loses money every year because the tenants abuse the water. She doesn't bill them back for the usage. And her water bill is just astronomical annually. And it's just the overall expenses of that, along with the fact that she only gets about 50% of the people to pay rent and she doesn't evict the other ones that don't. So all these factors leading into that, she's motivated. And so we've negotiated some killer terms with her owner financing it. We're basically buying this thing for $200,000. We're putting 10% down, so $20,000 down. It's a 30-year amortization, and there's I believe it's a 10-year balloon, and I think it's at 5% interest rate. And as well, we're getting 4 months of deferred payments on it. We're pretty confident that we're going to be able to stabilize it in about 4 months. We'll be able to get rid of the people that don't want to pay and get new people moved in. We're going to submeter the water back immediately, which will basically cure the $40,000 annual bill we'll bill back to the residents. They'll start actually using their water more efficiently after we do that. They won't wash their cars five times a week. And so we're pretty confident with this deal that after stabilizing it and just making it run efficiently, that and we're going to put about $30,000 into capital improvements. So we'll have about 50 into it. We're going to fix the roads, put some new signage up, you know, probably cut down some trees, you know, just aesthetics, things like that. We're pretty confident that this thing should, after debt service, you know, the debt service we have on it, after all expenses, taxes, insurance, repairs, maintenance, reserves, this thing should make probably in about the 60 to 65,000 range is what it actually was, is what the real net number will be after debt service and all other expenses. And which means in that particular market, actually based on the NOI, that particular market, that park will be worth probably in a range of about 700,000, 750,000. So I guess what I'm getting out of that story is that that park would be very achievable for almost anyone that has a little bit of money. You got $50,000, you could do that deal. I mean, that one's got some hair on it as well, so it's going to take some, you know, good old elbow grease in there to get the thing turned around. You're going to lose some people, and it's going to be a little bit of an operational turnaround, but it's a very easy one to turn around. It's small. It's very manageable, even for like a first-time investor. You know, it's not overwhelming. It's not huge. It's a small park, and that could be a very nice cash flow for someone that's only got $50,000 or, you know, maybe not much more than that to invest in a deal. So you can definitely get into deals like that. That's for sure.
That's neat. Well, your business sounds like it's really just skyrocketed here. And what's really the one thing that's exciting you about your business today? And then maybe even give us a glimpse of where you want to see it go in the future.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like I said, we're very slow, methodical, and very selective with what we buy. And so, I mean, I think the thing that excites me the most about our business today is that, you know, just we've really fine-tuned our acquisition strategy and you know, how to identify these strong markets and find good off-market opportunities. And so that makes me excited because it's allowing us to find these types of home runs or, you know, knock it out of the park type of mobile home parks that we're looking for. And so, I can't tell you that was the case when we first started. You know, we're trying to fumbling around, figuring out how do we find these good off-market deals? How do we, you know, I mean, it's just like any new business. You kind of fumble through it for a while before you really figure it out. So I think we're at the point now, and we have been for the past 2 years, to where we've got it. We've got it down to a science. We're very comfortable with what we do. We're steadily growing each and every year. And, you know, it's challenging to find. This market in general, this part of the real estate cycle is challenging because everyone is selling, you know, selling their properties for top dollars. If they're sellers, more than likely they're probably selling it for top dollar. But we still have been able to find really good opportunities even in this type of climate. And so what excites me about that is for the future, if we're doing good today in a challenging market to where it's really a seller's market, well, we know that there's always corrections. And so at some point in time, it will become a buyer's market again. And so I think that's we're going to be able to skyrocket when that shift happens. And so as long as we keep the same systems and processes in place that we have today, I think, you know, we do well today, but I think we'll be able to absolutely kick butt, whether it's 3, 5 years, whenever that might be, you know, whenever we have that shift that happens, we'll be in a really good position. So that really is exciting for me.
Oh, neat. Well, this is the part of our interview where we sort of wrap it up. And what I do here is just ask a quick series of questions of you, and you respond hopefully as quickly as I can.
Sure,
ask
them. Sure.
And then we'll get ready before we close it out. And I want to let everybody know too that's listening that all the information that Kevin's sharing too will be recapped in our show notes, and you know, you'll be able to reference that. So if you're on the road or running or whatever you're doing while listening to this, just note that you'll be able to access this information. So I'm going to go ahead and ask these questions. First one is a favorite real estate book.
Favorite real estate book. That's a good one. I mean, I'm not gonna say the one that everyone always says. I'm not gonna mention a title because I'm sure it's been said on your show a million times. But
doesn't start with Rich, does it?
No. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one of the first books I read. But let me think about that for a second. You know, there's a book that. It's not a well-known title. It was recommended to me a few years back. I read it, and you know, there's no exact science to it, but I think his methodology is spot on, and I agree with it. And it's called Timing the Real Estate Market, and it's written by a gentleman named Craig Hall. And so that one, that's been really relevant to me over the past couple years since I read it, and it's really it's really helped me understand real estate cycles a lot more. So, I mean, it's not my favorite book, but it's one that's had a lot of impact on me over the past couple of years.
That's great. That's a first for us. I haven't heard that before. That's wonderful. Thanks. How about your favorite business book?
You know, I just read, there's two that I've recently read. And so I'm not going to give you my favorite because I don't think I have a favorite. You know, they all have had a big impact on my life, but I don't think there's one. I mean, you know, Think and Grow Rich is, if I had to pick one favorite that's had the biggest impact, Think and Grow Rich is a big one. It's kind of like the Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, it's like kind of at the beginning of my career as an entrepreneur. I read both those books and they had a huge impact. But most recently I read the 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. That was a pretty cool book. And I'm gonna give you another one. I know you asked me for one, but I'll give you another one that's had a big impact on me. It's called Steal the Show, and it's written by Michael Port. And just really talks about how to become a person of influence and how to really engage your marketplace, engage your customer base. And just, it's an incredible book.
Excellent. How about a website? What's the most valuable website for success in what you do?
That's a good question as well. You know, I spend a lot of time, I don't know if it attributes to much of our success, but I do spend a lot of time on LoopNet. You know, it helps me still understand the different markets. Most things that are listed on LoopNet are overpriced. And for those that don't know what LoopNet is, basically it's the commercial real estate MLS, or it's the equivalent of. And I search it on a regular basis just to keep my finger on the pulse of what brokers are asking for properties in the different markets that we own stuff in or that we're actually prospecting in. So I spend most of my, I'd say if there's a website I spend more time on than any others, it's that one.
Great. How about favorite app?
Grasshopper app. We have our entire phone system run through our Grasshopper phone line, and it's incredible. It allows us to understand exactly what's happening inside each and every single one of our mobile home parks. I mean, from call volume to whether or not the manager is answering the phone when it rings, how long he or she is talking on the phone to prospective tenants or residents. If they're missing calls, I can identify it very quickly. And if someone calls in, they miss the call and they leave a voicemail, I get an email of that voicemail. And so it allows us to stay on top of our managers. We don't ever have situations, or if we do, we can nip them in the bud real quick to where the phone's not being answered, or we're advertising, spending money on advertising, and the calls aren't being taken, or we're not getting applicants like we should, you know, to move into our community. And so that thing has been a game changer for us having it. And it's on my iPhone. So at any point in time, I can get on my phone right now. I can see how many times our phone has rang in one specific park in our portfolio. And I can see how many times the manager's answered it and how long she's spoken on the phone.
God, I'd love to tie my property managers into that.
It's a great service.
Wow. Final question here. If you had to start all over, okay, for example, let's say just boom, something happened and just everything you own is gone, and all you have are $1,000 in cash. Knowing what you know, how would you get started getting back into real estate investing?
I'd probably go to local real estate clubs, and I would try to find out who the players are in that marketplace, or for whatever niche I want to be in. Let's just assume that you want to get back in the multifamily. Well, I'd try to find out, go to meetup.com. I'd go to local real estate clubs. I'd research public records, go to your local library. If you don't have money for a computer or internet, go to the local library and get on the internet. But I would find out who the owners and operators are within my marketplace I'm living in right at that point in time. And I would find how to add value to their business, to their life, in the hopes that either they would, it depends what you're looking for at that point in your life. You're looking to rebuild yourself, but you need to reestablish yourself. And so I would be trying to find that mentor that can take me underneath their wing, that I can add value to, but in turn, I can learn their business or whatever strategies work for them today that I might be able to replicate into my own business to kind of rebuild myself. But that's what I would do. I would seek out someone else that's out there actually doing it, that's successful at that point in time, and I'd find a way to add value to their business.
Oh, great. Great. Well, this has been a great, great conversation. I feel like there's so many more questions I would like to ask you, but I already kind of ran over a little bit here on a time. And first off, I'd like to ask if you would be able to share with folks how they could reach you if they want to find out more, especially about mobile home investing and your academy and so forth. How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, there's two different ways. Number one, you can actually go to our website for the academy itself. It's mobilehomeparkacademy.com. And on there, you'll find, you know, contact information for myself. You'll find we offer a free ebook on that website as well, which I'd like to offer to your listeners. Recently wrote it. It's called The 21 Biggest Mistakes That New Park Investors Make When Buying Their First Park and How to Avoid Them. And it's literally we sat down and wrote out as many mistakes as we could think of that were just huge mistakes that are very costly, and that's what we came up with. And it's a very incredible book, and it's pretty much it's a must if you want to get into this business. So you can download a free copy of that, but you can contact us through that website. You can even listen to the we have a mobile home park specific podcast as well. You can listen to the episodes on there. You can go on iTunes. And then for those that just want to get in contact with me directly, and maybe it's not specific to mobile home park investing, maybe it's just talk about real estate or commercial real estate investments or whatever it might be. If you have questions for me in general, they can reach me at my personal email. It's kevin@kevinbupp.com. Or they can just go to the website, kevinbupp.com. But so I wouldn't say I'm easy to get a hold of, but I'm very readily accessible, you know, on both those ways. But that is my personal email. It comes right to my phone, comes right to my computer. And so you'll definitely get a response from me in either one of those manners of which you try to reach out.
Ah, great, great. Well, you know, as you know, this is called the Old Dogs REI Network. And we have a tradition here that at the end of every podcast, we ask our guests to give us their best old hound dog howl. Okay, now I know you're living.
Oh boy, I didn't know this was coming.
Yeah, you got to read those emails, you know. you know, you're in Florida. I don't know. You know, you don't, probably don't have any too many hound dogs around there, but you know, we're just go ahead and just give it your best shot. Okay, you just your best old hound.
All right, I'll
dog
do it.
Howl. Okay,
I can do it. Ow! How about that? I don't know. That sounds like a horse or something. I don't know. I'm like a hound dog.
Almost like there's a little neigh at the end of that.
Yeah,
that was good. I like that. It was kind of like a, you know, almost something that you'd hear in like 101 Dalmatians or something.
Yeah.
It was really good. Well, Kevin, I can't thank you enough. This has been just a packed, information-packed podcast. You gave us so much good information, and I think that there are going to be those people out there that they really want to pursue this further. And you know, hopefully we'll be able to have you back on. I would love to be able to expand in some of these areas, and you know, just to, again, I think this is an area worth exploring. It's got a lot of wonderful elements to it that make it just attractive for investors. So, gosh, I just thank you and look forward to staying in contact. And hopefully we'll be able to those folks that listen to his show. It's an excellent show. I'm a subscriber, and he's got just great information, great guests. Definitely a good reason why it's one of the top 100 in iTunes.
I really appreciate it, but I'm glad that you brought me on. I've had a lot of fun here today. This is a great show that you have here, and I'm a subscriber to your show as well. So great job that you're doing, and I just appreciate you allowing me to come on and share, you know, this information and, you know, a little bit of my story with your old dog listeners. So I really appreciate it, and we'll definitely stay in touch, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, to all our listeners out there, thank you guys for tuning in. We know there's a lot of other places you could be spending your time right now and or listening to, and we just thank you that you chose us today. And stay in contact with us. We will continue to provide good content for you so that you can really see how real estate investing can be something to not only help your retirement today, but in the future as well. So thanks for listening, and everybody, just keep moving forward. God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.